This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Leila, chiamo Gloria. Gloria sui tuoi fianchi. La mattina nasce il sole. Entra odio ed esce amore.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box and the all-new 590 The Fan. The great Bob Plager in studio with us, who played for the greatest coach in NHL history and maybe the greatest coach in team sports history, and Scotty Bowman, a guy you're still friends with. Are there any Berube similarities? You played for Bowman. You've witnessed what Berube has done. Anything in common?
Well, I like Berube when we come in here. I like the coach because you look at his record. He played over 1,000 games. And he was the type of player because, you know, I was in the pro scouting and would go and watch him. And I always talk about, you know, he got on the ice. He knew what his role was. He took care of his players. But every shift out there, he give it every shift he went. He didn't cheat the people. And, you know, the number of years that he played, he had to fight to make a job every year. I mean, he wasn't that superstar that went into training camp. The job is mine. And he'd been traded a few times, went to other teams, but he understood the game and he had to learn the game. So when he came in here as a coach, I watched him out there in this team. I mean, you can look at all little things, why this team improved. They started to win. They were in last place. And he was the big, big reason that, you know, we had that little run. We went from last to first or to the Stanley Cup.
How about his tough love? He did, I don't know, I'm not saying Mike Yeo was a pushover, but he did get into stars' faces and let them know this is, you got to be better, right?
Well, and that's what I say. That's leading up the way he played and all this here and the way he worked. So players weren't going to fool him. And he went out there and maybe some player come up there and says, you know, I think I should get more ice time. And he's the coach that looks him right in the eye and he goes, no, think you should get more ice time. But I don't give ice time. You earn it. So you go out there and earn it. And you will get it.
Huh.
And, you know, stuff like that. And the finger would come out, the little job. And they love him for it. I mean, the players, because the other players, look, sometimes you're superstars, and as a player, you're sitting in there, you see a coach come in, he's sort of baby, the guy gets away with something, or he doesn't have to do this. And the players, you know, it's not right. But when you get a guy like him, he treats everybody the same, and he knows how to handle the players, so... He was the big part, the big reason.
Bowman took over, if I remember, midway through your first season. Did you have any idea then that he was going to be a legend in this business?
Well, you know, with Bowman, when you look at hockey then, I mean, I played against Scotty's teams and all that. And my brother Bark played and Jimmy Roberts. And a lot of these guys played for Scotty. He was in the Montreal Canadian organization. And he won championships. And he took junior A teams, and he went to the Memorial Cups. And he went in there, and he took their farm clubs. And Barkwin and Jimmy, they were on those teams, and they won championships. So Scotty was just a young person, but a little strange, but he won. And when he came to St. Louis, when I got here, it was Lynn Patrick was the general manager and the coach. And Lynn Patrick says, you better take care of Scotty there because he's going to be your next coach, and it won't be long before he's there. And when she came in, and Scotty's first move was, and he loved my brother Bark, the first trade he made was, he got my brother Bark and Red Berenson here. And we were a last place hockey team then, too. We were right down at the bottom.
Yeah.
And Scotty came in, he made that one trade with Red and Bark, and our team took off, and, you know, we played pretty good.
The really amazing thing about that team is how good you guys were on the back line. I'm not saying that Gary Sabourin and Frank St. Marseille and Red weren't really good. But if you're trotting out Barkley Plager with a 35-year-old Al Arbor and you, I think, a 24 at the time with Noel Picard, I mean, that's a pretty good defensive unit there.
Well, you know, I'm not bragging, but I think we changed the way we become the Broadway Bullies in Philadelphia because of what we did in St. Louis. They come in here. But we, with Noel and myself and Barkley and Al, and we had... You know, in those days, you only dressed 5 defensemen. You didn't dress as many players, you know. Now you dress 20 players. In those first few years, you only dressed 18. So you had 5 defensemen, and you not 12 forwards. You had 11 forwards. So it was 4 defensemen, and we had Jimmy Roberts was a defenseman and a forward, and John G. Talbot played defense and forward. So that's the way you played out there.
All right, you brought up Broad Street Bullies. There's a famous story about you guys going up in the stands in Philadelphia, and you had to hide in a bathroom stall because the cops were after you? Or tell me about that one.
Well, we had that big brawl at the, in Philadelphia at the end of the period when Al was going off the ice, and I stand out on the runway watching him make sure nothing happened, and somebody came running down, and they threw stuff on Al, and so I left the ice and went up in the stands after him, and behind me was my brothers, and then...
Did you take a swing at a fan? Did a fan take a swing at you?
Well, I went up after them. They were throwing things, and then they were all swinging up there.
And did anybody connect?
Well, there was some our players. We connected with a few of them. Oh, yeah, we connected. And then it was all the police, and everybody talks about fight the fans, but it wasn't the fans that we ended up fighting. It's when the police came in, and that's when it got scary, and that's why all the trouble started, was Al Arbor was there, and they pulled one of the policemen. They took their nightstick, and they hit Al right over the head. You know, Al got 34 stitches there, and they started hitting our players.
And then what happened? Like, did you see Al actually get hit?
Well, that's what it was all about when Al got hit and the police are there. So
did you guys go after the cops?
Oh, we were wrestling on the ground. Oh, yeah, we had to. I mean, they were swinging at us, but you had to grab them.
Plus, you had to YouTube this Blues fight in Philadelphia. That was 1972. Yeah. Yeah. So now what happens? Now you're in a bathroom stall. Tell me about that.
Oh, well, then, we fought with the fans and then the police and all that. And our whole team was on the ice. Everybody was out. You know, they come out of the dressing room and some of them were in there. So when we go to the dressing room, it's, what's happening. Tommy Woodcock is sharpening our skates because every player needs their skates sharpened again, because when you're running on cement and all that, there you get a few little nicks in them. So the word's coming in, the game's going to be canceled. They're not going to play the game. The police are all out there. And I think it's Mr. Snyder that owned the Flyers. They sat down, they talked, and they're going to play the game, and then whatever happens after the game will happen. So it's close to an hour in the dressing room. Now the game's starting. We're ready to go out. And of course, I'm the last guy off the ice, and I'm the last guy to leave the dressing room. But I stand at the front. They open the door, and boy, when they open that door, you're looking, and right down to the bench, it's all the police lined up on both sides.
Oh, my goodness.
And they got the one policeman there. He's got the big clipboard, and he's got his pen there, and they're all standing there. And as the players are walking out, the police are pointing, and like Gary Unger goes out, and they're going, number seven. They start.
Go ahead. We're trying to get this up here.
Yeah. They start pointing at Gary Unger. So the policeman there on the clipboard looks at his back, 7, Unger. And then Phil Roberto walks out. He was up there at the time, and the police are all pointing him. And I'm standing at the front, and I'm watching. Now I know what's happening. It's all these guys that were fighting the police and all this here. The police are all pointing out the numbers. So then I go back in the dressing room, and Tommy Woodcock, I says, Tommy, I'm going to hide back there. I says, lock the door when you leave and tell everybody they're gone. Everybody's out. I says, then come back and get me. So everybody went out. I'm hiding in the dressing room, and Tommy Woodcock locks the dressing room door, and the police say, is that everybody? And he says, that's it. So I go back to the door, and a few minutes later, Tommy Woodcock comes up and opens the door, and the police are all gone. So I go back. I sit on the bench and play the rest of the game. And in fact, we were down 2-0. We come back 1-3-2, and I was one of the stars of the game. And then after the game, here's the thing. After the game, now we're walking back, and there's all those line of policemen. They're all there again. And there's that guy with the clipboard, and I'm the last guy off, and I'm walking, I'm looking. Now here's a 7, Unger. 2 policemen go in with Gary Unger. 2 policemen go in with Phil Roberto, too. So the guys, the numbers were on that sheet. So when it comes to me, I get ahead and I'm walking down, and I started the whole thing, and I'm there, and I went, nobody had my number. They didn't have it because I was hiding in the dressing room. So I go in, and what happened, the police come in here, and the paddy wagon was out there, and they let the guys shower and change, and they handcuffed them, and they put them in the paddy wagon. And Mr. Solomon Jr., he was there, and he was so peeved off at the police, the way they treated our players. They hit him, and so that was it. Everybody went to jail except the guy that started it.
Yeah, and I just Googled the video or YouTube the video. And what you should do is the only person you can really see because the video is so bad is Bob Plager, number 5, right in the middle of everything.
Yeah, but if you look down, the next guy going up there, you see a number 8.
Yes.
And then the next guy
behind
him is the 23. Yeah.
Who's 23, by the way?
That's my brother, Billy.
Oh, Billy. Wow, all three players.
Well, you know, and I used to say that. I said, I don't know why everybody gets excited, you know. It's a city of brotherly love, and we were just going up to give him some love.
All right. We're going to get to some present Blues conversation in our final segment, but now let's look at, like, an all-time Blues team. We'll give you four lines, four defensive pairings, and three goalies. So how about this, Bob? You tell me. If we trot out Brett, Federko, and Sutter, Turgeon, Shanny, Tarasenko, and then Red with Babich, who did score 50, and Pavel Dimitra. And then in the fourth line, I mean, we could go like a checking line. We could go like Larry Patey, Chase and Twist. Or we could go like really skill with Gary Unger. And I almost put Ryan O'Reilly on there. And then the 500 goal scorer, Keith Tkachuk. What about the offensive group there? Do you like that, or is there a player, oh boy, we're leaving him off?
Well, you know, all those players, you can go with any one of those players. But, you know, when you're asking me, and not too many of us around now from those first few years, I mean, you go down, you look at the record, some of those players that were in there, you won't find a better player than Dickie Moore as a leader, you know, that could be on that thing, Dickie Moore. And if you're going players that we had here, St. Louis, short time, we had a guy named maybe only 18 games, Wayne Gretzky. He was here for a while. But, you know, I go back to our first years that we're in here. I mean, there were great players, but, you know, when you look at the first year of players, there was only six hockey teams in the NHL then. And
you had
that's 110 players playing to make it up. So every player that played in those days, I mean, they were great. Not only were they great players, they had to be because there's 50 players waiting behind to take their job. So these guys were great, like the Dickie Moores were in here and some of the players. There's a guy like Phil Goyette, a Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
But there was nobody than him. Phil Goyette, just quiet. And, you know, and those guys in Montreal, you know, they won five Stanley Cups. They all have their rings. But the players that are here and the players we got now is great. You say O'Reilly, I mean, right from... I watched him when he went to Colorado when he was first picked up, drafted there. And his game, I mean, what's good now? He just improves every year. He got better, never got satisfied with what he did. Every year he was better. And he made Colorado as the first year because he was a checker, just the guy who went out there and worked. He wasn't a goal scorer. He wasn't that, just his work ethic. But you look at him now, and, I mean, I love this guy all the time because he's – and I'm the guy that always says he doesn't cheat the fans, doesn't cheat his teammates, and that's what O'Reilly does.
All right, on the back line, we got four pairings. We have Pronger with Al. We have your brother Barkley with Rob Ramage. And then we'll go Al Arbour and Petro, and then we're going to put you with Noel Picard. What about those four pairings and any great defensemen we're leaving off?
Well, you're leaving the greatest defenseman. Again, it goes back to the greatest defenseman to play. They say there was Bobby Orr is the greatest to me, and for a lot of people, there wasn't a player that was better than him. But for years and years, and you guys...
Well, we had him for 1 year. You're talking about Scott Stevens?
No. Well, we had Scott Stevens, but no, a player that's not on there is, and he was here for the short time, and when we made our run was Doug Harvey.
Oh, yeah.
Doug Harvey was the... They put him and Bobby Orr. People say Doug Harvey was better than Bobby Orr. It was two different styles. Eight Norris Trophy winners in a row to him and the Stanley Cups, seven or eight Stanley Cups. And here's a guy that was retired, went and coached the New York Rangers, who never made the playoffs for years. And he put them in the playoffs as a coach, but he quits the next year because he wanted to go back. He missed being with the boys. So he goes back, plays in the minor leagues. I played with him in the minor leagues. To play. When we brought him to St. Louis, he was in his 40s. And he came in here the seventh game in Philadelphia. Scotty Bowman brought him in. It's the seventh game. We lost the sixth game, and they tied it up at the pulled the goalie, and then they won it in overtime, and we go into Philadelphia for the seventh game, and nobody had ever seen. He hadn't even been in the city. But Scotty Bowman, you know, knew he was in our farm club as a coach. The door opens, and Scotty brought him in and says, fellas, Doug Harvey, we all know Doug. Doug's going to play the game tonight. And we won the game there. He was the star of the game, and we went on
that's crazy.
In the next series. And then the next year, he's in St. Louis, and he's playing with us, and he makes the All-Star team. So,
wow.
No, he was one of the greatest. Yeah, people don't know.
Speaking of Orr, since there's not many people that we could talk to that actually was on the same ice with Orr, If you were starting a franchise and you could pick any player in hockey history and everybody's age 22, as great as Gretzky was, wouldn't you have to start it with Orr?
Well, that's how good Orr was, because people will pick a team, but go to the players and ask the players who played against them or who were involved in the game, would you sooner have Orr or Gretzky? And I'd say 90% of them would take Bobby Orr.
Scored 100 points as a defenseman three straight years. Yeah.
On bad knees. People don't know this guy. He had to quit at age 29 because of his knees. He had the knees operated on 9 times. So this guy from junior never played a full season without pain. And in those days, when they operated on your knee, it wasn't enough. They put the needle in or did some scrape, and they had to cut you.
Yeah.
So that's how good this guy was. He did all this in one leg.
How about, I've talked to, like, former NFL players, and they'd say if they faced, like, Gale Sayers or Barry Sanders, that they really had in the back of their mind, they just didn't want to be embarrassed.
Well, that's the word right there.
Is that with
when
Orr?
You went out there with Orr and the play. And he had fun when he played there, too. But you play against him, and you don't want to be embarrassed by him. And he could. And there was a night in St. Louis that Red Berenson was down the ice. He got the buck. He went down on Bobby Orr. And he did it all. Bobby Orr would block shots. He would play tough. He would fight. And, you know, they had players to come in here. Don't fight. Don't do this here. We want you on the ice. But Red went down on him, and Red faked the shot, the big slap shot, and Bobby Orr went like to block it like this here, and Red did a little toe drag and walked around him and walked in and scored the goal. And our fans start cheering and like booing Bobby Orr. And as a player, you're looking at him going, don't get him mad. Don't get him mad.
don't tug on Superman's cape.
So he went the face off, and he put his, just looked around at the stands, leaned on his stick, looked up at the people, and sort of dropped the puck and wins the face-off. It goes back to him. He takes it, and it's a little stick handle. He takes it around his net twice, and he goes down all the way down our end of the ice and walks in and go with one hand, puts the puck in our net, and he skates right back to where he was standing for the face-off before and starts looking at the fans again. That's what he said. You know, you got him peeved off. Don't get him mad.
Is there a player, past or present, that has the same skill set? Because when you talk about Gretzky, obviously you talk about the greatest of all time, but then you talk about, you know, Jagr and Crosby and Ovechkin, you know, that can score goals at will, similar to maybe different styles, but similar to the effect of Wayne Gretzky. But you don't hear many defensemen being compared to Bobby Orr. Is it just his unique style, not only size but skill set as a defenseman, or do you just not see players with that all-around skill?
Well, you see a lot of players right now with the skating ability to take the puck and jump up and go. But in those days, the defenseman was stay at home. If you had 4 goals, 5 goals, that was a good year for you, and that's what it was. It was to move the puck, and that's what Bobby Orr did. He came in, he changed it, the forwards, the defense, to rush up the ice and to go, and the way he could skate. So, I mean, there's great defensemen out there now, the skating ability and all this here. But for Bobby Orr in those days, he was the first, and no, there wasn't a player like him. I mean, Doug Harvey, we talk like, here, Doug, if he got his 8 goals a year and he played in the power play and all that, but he was just the guy that could move the puck, control the game.
But like Brad Park or Ray Bourque, none of those guys could do what he did.
No, but they were the new kind. Because of Bobby Orr, they started getting the offense of the Brad Park and those guys. But no, Bobby Orr was just, again, realize, you know, 29 years old, this guy has to retire. You look at his record, and players now, defensemen, are playing until they're 34, yeah. 30, 36, 37. Well, how many points would this guy have had?
I read an article about him maybe like 6 or 7 years ago. Apparently he had a good doctor like later in life, and that his knees, he can actually skate now. Have you heard anything about his health? Or...
Well, I've seen him now. I knew then, you know, he went to Chicago there for a while, but and he was told at the end if he was to play again, get his knee, it was to happen again, he would never walk again, or he wouldn't be able to walk. But you know the medicine right now, what they do now. And again, like, I've had my knee operated on. It's when they went in, your knee was shot. They cut you. You got 6 inches, 8 inches there, and they went right in to cut. Now they put the little needle in you, the arthroscope. They have it all on tape, and you're back skating in a short time. But him, when he got his knee done, they were cut wide open. And, I mean, to walk, I mean, it's just, and what a great guy.
Yeah, really humble, isn't he?
Very, and you don't see him too much. He goes around. He's an agent now, works for a thing. But very humble, and, yeah, he's the guy who went out to, you know, there's a funny story. As good as he was, it was Scotty Bowman in here told Jimmy Roberts had the job. Jimmy, you know, he used to shadow players, go out there. He was the checker. And it was, he's checking Bobby Orr and Scotty. You know, I want you to stick with him wherever he goes. I want you to go. If you go into the bathroom, you go to the bathroom. I want to know what kind of gum he chews. I want to know this here. And so Jimmy's out there, and Jimmy's following him, and Bobby's having fun with him. But Jimmy stays right with him. Everywhere Bobby went, he was there. And then it's the start of the third period, and we're going out there. You know, Scotty's like that there. Good job so far, and that Bobby Orr. And Jimmy goes, oh, yeah. Oh, and by the way, coach, juicy fruit. And Scotty's going, what? He goes, juicy fruit. And what? He goes, no, that's what kind of gum he's chewing.
That's good. One more before we go to break. Since the Blues just dominated the television stories for 3 months here, one of our reporters did a story on the St. Louis Blues car. And I can distinctly remember walking to Our Lady of the Pillar every day for school up Lindbergh and seeing the Barracuda drive by. You were a part of that. What was the thinking? And then there had to have been some stories when you guys are out drinking and you may not know which car is which car, yeah. Right?
Well, that car was Mr. Solomon. He had a deal. And the Barracuda were the new cars coming out, too. So for the advertising, all the Plymouth dealers in town, Scotty, Mr. Solomon, who is the greatest, had a deal work with them that the players would get the car for the season. And we would go and do so many appearances at the shops for them, sign autographs. So there's 18 of these Barracudas that are out there, and they're all white, and they have the blue note on the side, blue top, white car, blue note on the side. So it's just when they show up, all the players got them, and you go for lunch here. We'd be down in on the hill somewhere. We go for lunch and. There's 18 of those same cars parked there. And, you pull them in, there's two or three. But when you come out, you don't have the little beepers or you don't have this. You have to know your license plates or that. There's no things on the keys. You got to put them in. And when the players had come out, which car's there. So you're going up and down trying the keys in the car doors. But
Scotty?
Scotty hated those cars because, and I was single at the time I had them. I was probably the only single guy. But Scotty would come in, and those cars, he said, well, we had another one. We had another sighting last night. And the boys are sitting there, no. And he goes, yep. He says, yeah, I'll come in here, and the first phone call I get is morning. Why do your team can't win? I seen one of the Blues cars at Talena's on Skinker at 2:30 this morning. I see one of your cars at 2:30 this morning there. And Scotty would, and everybody would look at me because that's... I was a single guy, and they were right. I was there. And then he'd come in. Now, we had a 3:30 sighting this morning, or we had this. Scotty hated them. And then we have a party one night, and we go out, and I pulled my car in. There's three. There's four. Now they're all together. And Scotty, we're all ready to leave, and Scotty's out there watching the players. So here it is. It's either Noel or something walking down. Nobody knows their car. He tries the keys on about six cars before he finds his. And the players are all trying the keys in their cars and before they find him. And so it's the next day. Scotty comes in and he goes, those cars, they're the worst. He said, I watched last night. Not one player in here knows his license. Not one player knows his car. He said, I watched last night. Everybody going down, trying four cars, trying their keys in the car. Nobody knows which is his. And then he stops and he says, no, I was wrong. He says, there was only one player. There was one player who had no problem. There's only one player in here who knows which car is his, had no problem. And he goes, that's Bob Plager. So I put my hand up. I'm really excited. And he goes, and the only reason that is, it's the only car left in the parking lot. So, and on there, the best is my brother Bark lived beside me too. And I had borrowed his car one time. I had to borrow his. So with all this going on, we have a new player. I'm single at the time, and I told Mr. Solomon, he can have my car. He can take the car. Mr. Solomon said, no, we'll work something out. I said, no, I don't need it. He's married. He can have the car. I don't need the car. So my Blues car I gave back. So it's a week later. There's a sighting, another sighting that Scotty comes in. Well, we have another. So we have a sighting there last night about 2 o'clock in the morning, the Blues car. Well, they don't look at me because they know I give my car back. So now it's going Noel, They're looking at Noel. And Bark says, you better tell Noel he better be, you know, to watch himself. And now they're getting these sightings for the next couple of weeks. There's a sighting every now and then. These cars, 2, 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. But nobody looks at me. And it's Noel. Now they're starting to blame Noel. So I finally went up to Bark and I said, Bark, I said, I really feel sorry for Noel. It's not Noel. He's, what do you mean? I go, here. So I give Bark these keys. He says, what's that? I says, those are your car keys. I says, I drive by your house at night. If I'm going out at 11 or 12 o'clock, Bark's asleep. I take his car and I'm going around the city with Barkley's car and then I put it back at night. So, no, those cars were great. And there's a lot of stories.
Yeah, and they're still out there if you want to buy one. You can YouTube right now and you can find them. There's like 2 or 3 of them for sale. Mm. All right, we'll take a short time out. We'll get Bob's thoughts on the present blues when we come back.
Ready for the boys of summer? Pull up a front row seat at Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill for all the Cardinal action this season. During every Cards game, you can enjoy the new Hotshots Triple Play Special featuring a large pizza, order of boneless wings, and a bucket of Bud Family bottles. And don't forget, score $1 Hotshots tacos any day after the Cards score 8 or more runs. Hotshots is a proud home of the Cards fans since 1990, and your home for all the games all the time. Find a location near you at hotshotsnet.com.
It's not summer grilling season until you hear the sizzle of quality.